from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum this morning in our first half hour, the Obama and Romney campaigns are busy preparing their candidates and trying to lower expectations for Wednesday's first presidential debate in Denver, which will focus on domestic policy. We'll preview the three upcoming presidential debates with James Fallows. Then at 9:30, will Proposition 33 make your car insurance cheaper or more expensive? Depends on whom you ask. The proponents of this initiative say it will encourage competition in the auto insurance market, making policies cheaper and more accessible. However, critics say it will allow insurers to unfairly penalize customers with no insurance or lapse coverage. Forum is next, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. The three presidential debates are coming up, with the first one scheduled for this coming Wednesday evening in Denver, focusing on domestic policy. Hundreds of millions are expected to be tuning in, and the effect of the upcoming election, the battle for voters, could indeed be highly significant, possibly even move the needle, which now shows incumbent President Barack Obama with a lead over his challenger, Republican Mitt Romney. In this opening segment of Forum, we want to discuss what to look for and what to listen to in the debates. And helping us do that is James Fallows, who is joining us from the nation's capital. James Fallows is national correspondent for The Atlantic, author of many books, including most recently China Airborne, which we discussed on Forum. And his article in the September issue of The Atlantic is called Slugfest. It's all about the Romney-Obama debates. And welcome back to Forum, Jim Fallows.
Michael, nice to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Good to have you. And what about, you know, so many people are saying debates are not really debates. They're joint press conferences, and maybe the public looks at them too much like a sporting event. You've got not only a slugfest here with President Obama and Governor Romney in boxing trunks looking very pugilistic and hitting each other with punches and counterpunches. Is that how the public sees debates, you think?
I think that I'm going to basically, yes. And you know, Michael, that over the years, I generally take this high-toned, principled approach to public life. And so you might expect me to say that we should view these debates in some kind of Socratic fashion and look to see who matches the logic of the other person. But it turns out that in practice, over the decades, what seems really to matter in the debates is how the people seem as people, how they deal with each other, how they handle the unexpected, you know, their interactions, both with the questioners and with their opponents. And that's especially important when it's a debate like this where you have an incumbent president running against a challenger. It's the only case in which we see them side by side on equal footing. So we'll listen to what they said, but we'll mainly look at how they are.
Talking again with Jim Fallows, who was, by the way, a speechwriter for President Carter and is a veteran political analyst. And actually, in the September issue of The Atlantic, in this analysis of the debates, and you intrepid reporter at heart that you are, you went back and saw all those old debates, look back at those, show some real endurance, I must say. But you come up with the notion that it could be a game changer, and yet, at this point, with President Obama gaining in all the swing states and things looking much better for him because of that 47% thing that was exposed by Mother Jones, is that still your view?
Well, when I was working on this article earlier this year, and it came out a couple of weeks ago, and since that time, the race appears to have broken much more clearly in President Obama's favor than was the case early this year. What I can say is that the plan of the Romney campaign from the beginning has been to model this year's election on the 1980 contest between Jimmy Carter, for whom I worked, as you said, and Ronald Reagan. And that was the recent era in which debates most clearly made a dramatic difference. It was a time when the public that was unhappy with Jimmy Carter finally had a chance to say, okay, how do we feel about Ronald Reagan, who most of the people except Californians hadn't seen? And it was only 1 week before the election, and after that one debate, the polls went very, very strongly for then-Governor Reagan, and he won very easily, even though the race had been close before that. So that's been the hope of the Romney plan. In the last month or two, as you say, things seem to have been much more difficult for Governor Romney, so it would take something really unexpected in these debates to do what they hoped was the case from 1980.
There is an advantage for the opponent, especially in the first debate, though, and we have Axelrod and others who advised the president, playing up Romney's strengths as a debater. And in many ways, you point out in your article that probably Romney, although President Obama is a terrific orator, he's not as good a debater or as skilled a debater as Governor Romney.
The point I was trying to make is first, as you say, the expectations game is really a huge meta contest going on here with each side talking up the other so that the instant reaction to the debate is, oh, Governor Romney did surprisingly well, President Obama seems surprisingly weak, et cetera. But it also is the case, number one, that the challenger is usually seen to have, quote, beaten expectations, unquote, on his or her first encounter with an incumbent president just because it's a surprise to see them standing as equals. It doesn't happen otherwise. The other point I was making is that while President Obama, in the whole scope of his rhetorical presentation, is much more effective than Governor Romney is, debates are the thing that Romney does best of everything he does, and they're the thing that President Obama does sort of least effectively in his whole rhetorical arsenal. So it wouldn't be amazing just on form to have this be a closer debate contest than you would expect given their overall reputations.
Well, you also say in the article, Romney is strong when prepared and weak and error-prone when forced to improvise, sort of like, I'll bet you $10,000, as he said to Rick Perry. And one never, I suppose, knows what kind of minefield or improvisation is necessary in these debates. So I imagine the Obama campaign or the Obama preparers are trying to get him off into improvising in some way.
Indeed. And I think we've seen, you know, much more dramatically in the time over the last month or so after my article came out, of times when Governor Romney is forced to do something and he hasn't thought through, often his instincts don't serve him well. He doesn't have that kind of natural political athleticism that Bill Clinton, for example, on the other extreme had, or Ronald Reagan, too. And so in the debates, there are two aspects of this dealing with the unexpected. One is the actual policy points. And I'm sure that Governor Romney is just, you know, prepared on everything that all the normal criticisms that could be made of him, whether it's Obamacare from Massachusetts or the 47%, he will figure out what he's going to say in response. But the other is just often in these debates, there's something that nobody anticipated and is what we remember, whether it's Lloyd Benson and Dan Quayle with You're No Jack Kennedy, or whether it's Bernard Shaw and Michael Dukakis on what would happen if your wife were raped, et cetera. And those often are the things we remember of the flashes of the person's real carriage and demeanor and response. So those are hard to prepare for, almost by definition.
We're talking to James Fellows. He's with us from the nation's capital. He's national correspondent for Atlantic, author of many books, including most recently China Airborne, and his article Slugfest on the Romney-Obama debates appeared in the September issue of the Atlantic. What are you looking for in these debates, and what are your expectations, and just how much do you think they will have an impact on the presidential election? We have a half-hour segment with Jim Fellows, so if you have something you'd like to add to the conversation or if you have a question about the debates, please feel free to join us now. Our toll-free number is available to you, whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite, and you can call us now at 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls, and feel free to join the program. Again, the toll-free number, 866-733-6786. You can also email us at forum@kqed.org or post any questions or comments you have on our website simply by going to kqed.org/forum and clicking on the segment, or going to our Facebook page. You can also tweet us, and our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. And as I said, if you'd like to join us, please do so now. This is a half-hour segment, so we'd like to hear from you and hear what you have to say about your expectations vis-a-vis the debates. Expectations seem to be kind of thinner when it comes to specificity, but not necessarily negativity. Would that be a fair assumption, Jim Fellows?
Yes, I think that is so. And it's on the negativity front, there is a careful line that President Obama needs to walk. One of the difficulties in general for incumbent presidents in preparing for debates is, number one, they're extremely pressed for time, and number two, all the previous three-plus years of their lives have involved no one who actually challenges the president to his face. You know, you always are in a sort of different situation as president of the United States. So for President Obama, it's getting in the spirit of having somebody challenging him and not showing a kind of supercilious side that he did occasionally reveal in the debates with Hillary Clinton back in the primaries 4 years ago, most famously with, "You're likable enough, Hillary." So finding ways to advance his case without seeming to be too aloof or too cold. And for Governor Romney, it's figuring out which of his various campaign modes that he wants to take. Is it going to be the mode of saying President Obama is a good and sincere man, everybody likes him, but things haven't worked, or making a more direct attack on his values and his competence?
Well, speaking about attacks on values and competence, clearly he's going to go after President Obama on the economy. And yet I was reading conservative commentator Charles Krauthammer, who said maybe if he wants to go big, he should blame President Obama for the darkness that followed the Arab Spring and the whole Mideast policy. Do you anticipate something like that?
I would anticipate that. And again, this is the reason we watch these things, is they're one of the few political events that actually unfold in real time. We don't know how they're going to handle things, because you could imagine, on the one hand, Governor Romney making a fairly effective case as if he were sort of channeling Charles Krauthammer and saying there was this great embrace of the Arab world, the big speech in Egypt, there was the Nobel Peace Prize, and now, look, we have a whole region in turmoil. On the other hand, you can imagine President Obama, who's been living this drama for the past couple of years, being able to come right back on that and push Governor Romney on an area of his relative unpreparedness, which is just foreign policy in general. You know, that if these two people were equally smart and equally sophisticated, President Obama has lived foreign policy for 4 years and Governor Romney hasn't. So you could imagine it being effective either way, and that's why we excuse me, it is again why we watch.
We also watch sort of waiting, as I think is implicit in your coverage, waiting for who's going to make the gaffe or who's going to make the statement that's going to come back to haunt them and blare in the headlines.
It's true, and I think there, we've seen in the last cycle of debates in the Republican primaries, I think this is the first time in modern presidential history where somebody's been eliminated purely because of a terrible debate performance. I'm thinking, of course, of Governor Perry of Texas. That on form, he was the only sort of other plausible figure than Mitt Romney to win the nomination, but it was only because of two or three catastrophic debate performances that he basically had to drop out of the race. So we have seen recent indications of just these sort of unscripted moments in the gaffe category that changed the outcome. That's not as likely with people as practiced as Governor Romney and President Obama, but anything can happen.
Again, we're talking to James Fellows, national correspondent for The Atlantic and author of Slugfest, which is about the debates in the September issue of The Atlantic. Let's go to your calls. We'll begin with a caller from Fayetteville, West Virginia. Kurt, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. James, big fan. And
thank you.
My question is, will these presidential and vice presidential debates really be the key factor in deciding those last few independent voters, and will they really get into the specifics of each of their plans?
So on the last part of that, of getting into the specifics, I think the record of these debates, again, through the modern era, is that usually they don't turn so much on specifics. For example, you could theoretically ask what President Obama is going to do differently about financial regulation and things like that in the future, or you could ask for details from the Republicans about where they would make the budget cuts to deal with the deficit that they are concerned about. But probably if those questions are asked, the answer on either side will be more of sort of the mainstream talking point that the party has put forward. That's a skill that politicians have. On whether they're going to affect the undecideds, it's really hard. I guess the undecideds, I think of them as being more people who have just, for one reason or another, not paid enough attention so far. So the main way it could have a difference is if people who sort of sat out the campaign until now decide they'll watch this sort of sporting showdown and say, yes, I like the look of Governor Romney, or I like the way President Obama feels in command. So that would be the main effect, I can imagine. The fact that it's not as close as the 1960 race or the 1980 race, where debates were really important, means that there may be less leverage of that sort.
Although when you mention liking the look or the way the candidate feels and so forth, there's a lot of emphasis in these annual, pugilistic or wrestling matches or whatever they are. There's a lot of emphasis in those who analyze it, and you bring this up too, in body language. And that is,
indeed. And I make the kind of crass sounding, but a crass sounding point that I believe is true, which is that if you simply watched the debate and killed the sound, you would have as good an idea of who was considered to be the winner as you would if you listened to every single word, that it is a lot about just carriage. And this isn't, you know, how we think in civics books that presidential elections should be resolved, but it seems to be one of the factors people actually take into account. If you look back at the Republican primary debates, it is a particularly striking way in which Mitt Romney usually was standing there relaxed, confident, not being flustered, and the other people were sort of squabbling around him. And that was a sign, I think, of the way that he came through the primary debates pretty much in control.
And here's a listener named Ann who is excited to see the debates and still undecided. Hi, Ann.
Well, thank you for taking my call, Michael. Now, I was going to go into this with big all enthusiasm, but I have to disagree with your guest, unfortunately, because I have been paying attention. And I've been paying attention to both sides and seeing how polarized, if I may use that term, this election is. And one opportunity for these debates is for me to see the men side by side and to see how they react to the spontaneous question where they have to extemporize. Because I feel a lot of times when they can extemporize well, it shows well for their character in, you know, becoming president. All right, and that's it. I could go on forever, and I know we only have a half an hour.
Well, but the important thing is you're going to be watching and you're going to be deciding based on...
For the first time in my life, I am thrilled to be able to see these debates and to watch these two men side by side.
All right. I appreciate that call, Ann. I thank you for it.
So I'll say in response to the caller, Ann, number one, I think it's a good sign for democracy that voters are waiting to see how the two men interact. Number two, that in terms of still being undecided, I know that is a genuine position for you and not a result of not paying attention. It is a statistically relatively unusual position in this year's election, that the undecided seem to be a smaller group of the electorate than has been the case in some previous years. But number three, the way in which Ann described how she will view the debates is exactly the way I think most people putting these together hope they will be seen, as a test of how the people respond under uncertainty, how they deal with complexity and nuance and changes in tone. And so I think that both parties and the debate commission will be very happy to hear the way you describe what you're looking for.
Also interested, Jim, in your take on what many people point out about the debates year after year, that certain areas are, if not simply ignored, obviated from the content. The environmental issues, for example, don't really come into the fore usually. And Matea Kramer, who is the lead author of A People's Guide to the Budget, listed a whole bunch of things that she felt weren't going to come into the discussion because they were sort of too dangerous to really discuss. Can you comment on that?
Sure. I think that's a fair point. And I think my first response would be that in a way that is more about American politics as a whole than it is about the case study of the debates. I know that the people who are the questioners who are preparing what they're going to be asking for these debates, you know, led by Jim Lehrer, who's written a very interesting memoir about his long career as debate moderator, they recognize that of the, say, 15 or 20 topics they will be able to raise, there are probably 200 that they would, in principle, should raise. And so everyone they choose means five other worthy topics that they're not covering. So there's going to be some controversy about what they left out. I think the absence of environmentalism from mainstream political debate is one feature of our current politics, which people will look at with dismay and wonderment a decade or two from now, including those who view it that way right now.
Well, I've got a listener named Dave who emails us asking, doesn't the debate moderator really make the whole function positive or acrimonious? And we should mention that this is the first time I believe we're going to have a woman moderator.
It's the second time, I believe. Carol Simpson, who was then,
right,
I believe,
yeah,
of ABC, did it a number of years ago. I forget which debate she actually moderated, but she did one of them. So, but it is the first one in a while. And I think that one reason why we always see Jim Lehrer, we're going to be seeing again this time, is that he seems to have established himself with both parties as somebody who can try to engage the issues, but in a civil way. And the choice of questioners itself is a whole elaborate, balkanized negotiation between the Commission on Presidential Debates and the two parties, because each side has certain people they view as just being anathema, as too identified with one political position or another. But yes, the moderators have a significant responsibility.
And I want to read a Twitter comment from Bob, who writes, reading that Romney is practicing zingers while Obama plans to get Romney flustered, thinking it's more theater than news. And you can let us know what your thoughts are by tweeting us. Again, our handle here is at KQED Forum. Russ writes, James Fallows, if you were coaching Obama, what specific move would you suggest he make that might throw Romney off guard?
It's worth, when you look back at Romney's old debate tapes, both this last cycle and 4 years ago when he ran unsuccessfully against John McCain, then back in Massachusetts, he does not respond well to sort of criticisms of his integrity or good intentions or nobility or whatever, things which treat him somewhat disrespectfully. He tends to respond poorly to those. Now, this is a very difficult thing because an incumbent president, with all the power that goes with that role, can't really be that much on the warpath, or it seems just improper. So finding some way to seem subtly to be making fun of Governor Romney, I think that is the area, that's the approach that would fluster him most.
Incumbent president is also used to, well, behavior that sometimes just comes short of sycophantic behavior. I mean, being deferential and hanging on every word and being overly respectful to, if not the man in the office. And that can be troubling when a president gets up there and he's challenged. And
It can be. And there's a wonderful book called The Candidate by Sam Popkin of UCSD. And he, in the 1980 debates, he played the surrogate Ronald Reagan in preparing Jimmy Carter for the debates. And he writes in the book that it was just Carter was almost, shocked that at the sort of disrespectful tone that Popkin was taking on the podium, because people inside the administration, they tend to know about their own good intentions. The president himself is surrounded with this bubble of authority. And so being exposed in person and just directly to your face to some lack of complete respect can take a president aback.
And Rob Portman is the surrogate for Governor Romney in preparing for these debates. You know who is for President Obama?
Yes, John Kerry is playing the role of Mitt Romney. I think that's an inspired choice. They're both from Massachusetts. They have a kind of similar manner. They even sort of look the same. So I think that's a brilliant choice.
Try to get another call on, and that's you. David, hi.
Oh, hi. I'm also a big James Fallows fan. I've been reading him in The Atlantic for for almost 20 years.
Well, thank you.
I love your writing. And my question, well, first of all, I'm in it for the theater because I live in a state, California, where my vote really isn't going to make any difference. So I'm really just in it for the zingers and the theater, unlike Anne. But I wanted to know if potentially you thought there could be a bump one way or the other, if we're going to see a real philosophic, non-detailed, specific debate on the congressional elections and the way in which the House of Representatives and the Senate fall in the election of 2012.
That's a really interesting question. And, of course, as the presidential race looks less close now than it did a month ago. The attention shifts to the House and Senate. Of course, anything can happen in the presidential race. I will dare make a prediction, which I rarely do, which I think I predict that Governor Romney will be seen as having done relatively well in these debates just because the narrative of the last month has been him having trouble. So that's a way to change the story.
And make it a tighter race, perhaps?
Yes, it's just more exciting. So that's my prediction.
Well, we thank you for being with us. James Fallows, national correspondent for The Atlantic. Again, his most recent book is China Airborne. Always good to have you, Jim. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
And thank you, our listeners. Another segment is coming up. We're going to continue with our political coverage. We're going to find out what's behind and what's ahead for Proposition 33 on the November ballot. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.